It will save them money. It will get the IRS out of their pockets. This is good for small business.
Congress considers a stimulus bill for small business. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 4th of August. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the bittersweet dedication of the new Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue in Anchorage.
I am not happy that one or two mile strip is an adequate representation of what we'd ask for in the city.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
The Doyon family of companies working together to build Alaska's future.
Representative Don Young's office says the veteran congressman has been cleared in a federal investigation. Young's spokeswoman Meredith Kenny says the Alaska Republicans' legal team was notified today by the Department of Justice that the case will not be prosecuted. She says the congressman isn't ready to comment on the development yet. The Republican was facing federal investigations into connections to Bill Allen, the former Vico CEO who was convicted of bribing state lawmakers. The investigation was also looking into an unusual spending bill earmark that benefited one of Young's campaign supporters in Florida. The Justice Department declined to comment on the case. The department typically doesn't confirm or comment on ongoing investigations or their conclusion if charges aren't brought. The White House is pushing hard for a small business stimulus bill. It would establish a $30 billion lending fund for community and smaller banks that lend to local businesses and give $12 billion in tax breaks. Alaska's Democratic Senator Mark Begich tried to drum up support for it on the Senate floor last week.
You know, this bill is about $12 billion that the small business community will not have to pay to the IRS. It will save their money. It will get the IRS out of their pockets. This is good for small business.
Begich says as a small business owner, he has an appreciation of what the assistance will mean to Alaska's companies and small banks. Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski says she likes the core of the bill, but not the add-ons included by the Democrats, like the $30 billion lending pot. She says it lacks oversight and accountability.
Certainly what was negotiated and worked out in committee, I think is good. It's what we see then when these bills move from committee and then you have kind of this restructuring that goes on prior to it coming to the floor. The leader's office cobbles together some additional initiatives and the guts of a good bill have been left by the wayside.
State officials are waiting to see whether the bill will get passed this week before the Senate adjourns. John Katz, director of the governor's Washington office, says Sean Parnell supports small business, but is waiting to see how things fall into place.
We have not become involved in the partisan maneuvering in the Senate over the small business legislation. There's nothing constructive that we can contribute to that dynamic since it is so partisan in nature.
The head of the Small Business Administration, Karen Mills, says the bill will fund programs already in place that funnel money to small businesses throughout the country, including Alaska. Mills was in the state last month and visited small business development centers.
We were talking to our small business development centers that go actually all around the state into many of the rural areas and bring in a team, and they actually teach a course up there called Profit Mastery, which helps a small business owner understand where are they making their money and how are they going to run their business so that it can be more profitable, so they can hire more people and they can grow. Alaska is a state of entrepreneurs.
While Mills was in Alaska, she spoke at an Anchorage conference on 8A government contracting. The program gives special opportunities to Alaska Native corporations so they can secure government contracts. It's come under scrutiny because the corporations can get no-bid federal contracts of any size. Critics say the Native corporations are getting too much of a leg up and are strong enough now that they don't need it. The program is currently undergoing a rewrite and may change so that the companies have to report back on how their shareholders are benefited by the contracts. Mills says while they're tightening oversight of the program, she defends it and says it does serve a valuable purpose.
One of the things that we are asking Alaska Native corporations to do is to do a transparent reporting of the benefits that are delivered. And we had the opportunity to visit the Afognak Cultural Camp, for instance, out on Kodiak Island, and see firsthand some of the benefits that come back to the communities from the work in the Native corporations. And I think when those benefits are understood and articulated and quantified, they are pretty impressive.
The SBA's rewrite of the 8A program is now in review within the agency. The city of Anchorage today held a ceremony to open a new road named after Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. The naming of a city street after Dr. King has a controversial history stretching back three decades. Advocates originally sought to have 9th Avenue named after the civil rights leader, but the idea was met by opposition from a group led by Don Smith and rejected in a citywide vote, as was a similar attempt to name the Performing Arts Center after King. Reverend Dr. Alonzo Patterson is the pastor of Shiloh Baptist Church. Dr. Patterson says during the time of controversy, there was a proposal to name a strip of the Minnesota Drive bypass after King,
which was quite a ways out. And of course, then it was becomes almost like a joke because it was humorously known as Dead Man Curve, and it carried a connotation we thought was beneath the dignity of. And so that was rejected. And under the administration of Mayor Mark Bagage, he advanced, as I understand it, the proposal to name this strip of ground running from Elmore around and intersecting with Boniface. That was a section that we went out and celebrated today. And so that always comes through as a compromise, but certainly did not meet the standard asked for by a number of citizens of Anchorage, Alaska, which runs a whole gamut of our community. It wasn't just a particular ethnic group, but it was the whole gamut of our community, in my opinion.
And Pastor Patterson, who is Don Smith, and what was his stated objection to having 9th Avenue named?
Don was the, basically, as I understood it, kind of the voice leader of opposition. Some of the things that caused arousal in the citizenry had to do with the fact of changing their stationery for businesses, changing their addresses, et cetera, those kind of things. But Mr. Smith was a local citizen, you know, who just did not care to name anything after Dr. King, and I guess that was his right.
And so today's dedication event, how was that? Knowing the history and now hearing this, that as you said, it sort of seems like a compromise. How does it feel to have this stretch of road named after Dr. King?
Well, of course, I'm sure some people were excited about that. I appreciate the mayor following through with what Mayor Bagage had begun. But personally, as far as I'm concerned, I am not happy that that 1 or 2 mile strip is an adequate representation of what we'd ask for in the city. Sometimes we don't realize that the worth of a people are sometimes tied to the attribution that you apply to a given figure within their cultural history.
And so what would you like to see in the future? Are you still working towards some other possibilities for a larger recognition of Dr. King downtown?
I do not hold out a lot of hope for something downtown because of, again, the way things are. And I think some people would love to put this whole issue behind them. However, Dr. King's contribution continues to reveal itself in a time of controversy in which we live. Right now, we're working toward the principles of Dr. King more than we're working toward the recognition of landmarks of Dr. King, and that is to create a community of one people with one purpose in forming into one community. We're aligned with bridge builders and others who advocate this kind of a message across Alaska, and I wholeheartedly endorse that.
Reverend Dr. Alonzo Patterson is pastor of Anchorage's Shiloh Baptist Church. There is a Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial at 9th and L Street. Dr. Patterson says advocates raised $250,000 to get it placed there in the 1990s and are now raising funds to refurbish it. Pictures and video from today's Avenue dedication are at our website, aprn.org. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Juneau prepares to make a bid to host the Arctic Winter Games.
I mean, there's just joy on everybody's face. It's just one of those events that just wows you.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide coverage for Alaskans who are denied health insurance due to a high-risk medical condition. For example, a person who has diabetes and has been rejected by an insurance company will be accepted by ACHIA. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. Information is also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
A half dozen conservation groups are challenging the state's lawsuit to overturn the listing of beluga whales off Anchorage as endangered. The groups are seeking to uphold the 2008 Environmental Protection Act listing for the few hundred whales in Cook Inlet. The state filed a lawsuit in June to overturn the listing. The state's position is that the listing is unnecessary because the population has stabilized. It also is concerned about the listing's impact on economic development, including expanding the port of Anchorage. Conservation groups say the belugas need the extra protection the ESA listing brings and accuse the state of wasting taxpayer money fighting the listing in court instead of helping the whales recover. Despite another change in a court ruling today, some aspects of the Nilchina caribou hunt will go forward. Last week, the State Board of Game followed a directive from District Judge Carl Bauman and allowed modified fall caribou and moose hunting in the Nelchina area. Judge Bauman had ruled in July that the Otna community hunt and the Tier 1 subsistence hunt were illegal. At the request of the State Department of Fish and Game, Judge Bauman issued a partial stay to the July 9th ruling prohibiting the hunts, which allowed the department to restore the autumn portion of the Tier 1 hunt. The department then issued an additional 500 permits to those who had held Otna community hunt tags. Bruce Dale is Region 4 Supervisor for Fish and Game.
But it was a temporary stay, and that season is now only good through September 20th. In addition, the court authorized us to administer a Tier 2 hunt for the winter season, which is going to take place from October 21st through March 31st.
Fish and Game plan to issue 1,000 permits for the Tier 1 hunt based on revised estimates of the strength of the Nilchina herd. Today, Judge Bauman canceled the extra permits at the request of plaintiffs in the original suit. But Ken Johns, Otna CEO, disputed the stay of the judge's original ruling.
The problem with this whole thing is that when you put so many hunters out there in an area, the danger is that they shut down the hunt very rapidly, and that happened before to us. And there's a danger that you could have a lot of tickets, but your hunt may be a week. Back in the 90s, they opened the hunt for registration, and that's what happened. They killed about over 3,000 caribou in 5-6 days.
John says Otna is reviewing options and may ask the state Supreme Court to allow the subsistence law by returning to Tier 2 hunts. Dale says the original 850 permits are still good and will be available Friday. More people are sailing Alaska's Marine Highway this year. Rider and vehicle numbers are up after dropping last year. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Last year's worst of the recession brought ferry ridership and revenues down, but this year they're coming back up. especially for big events like the State Fair in Haines.
Boy, last week was a big week. I mean, it was up 10% for passengers above last year, and vehicle counts were up 10% over what they were last year. So a good year this year.
Marine Highway Chief Jim Beadle says overall passenger numbers are up almost 4.5% this calendar year. That does not fully make up for last year's drop of a little more than 6%. But Beadle says it's still enough to be considered a recovery.
Last year, the Bellingham runs didn't sell out until almost the day of sailing. This year, you can't get on the Bellingham run. I mean, people made their travel decisions early. The staterooms were all gone. The card space was all gone. And that then meant that the traffic to Prince Rupert was up.
He says that's good for towns such as Petersburg and Wrangell. Tourists boarding in Rupert, a central British Columbia port offered as an alternative to Bellingham, make more stops along the way.
They're people that are used to driving the highway, used to having hotels or camping, and they tend to want to spend more time in Southeast Alaska than the Bellingham folks. The Bellingham folks, major ports are Ketchikan, Juneau, and then they, you know, almost 40% of them go directly to the road system, Haines and Skagway, and just head on up north.
Tourism and the improving economy are helping, but local traffic to village destinations such as Hoonah and Angoon is also up, though only a little bit. And Beadle says Southeast's fast ferry runs from Juneau to Sitka and Petersburg are doing better than expected.
The Petersburg traffic is slowly starting to climb. More and more people are figuring out that when the fair weather does that leg, the direct shot Juneau-Petersburg, that's a pretty nice run. And I guess that just goes to show the longer you do something, the more people figure out how to make it work for them.
Along with passengers, vehicle traffic is also up about 3% this calendar year. It dropped a little more than 1% in 2009. Beadle says 2010 could set an all-time record for cars and trucks. Marine Highway General Manager John Falvey says the improvements are a relief since it was unclear how long the recession would impact traffic.
We're bouncing back, and it wasn't as bad last year as we thought it might have been. 5 or 6% in Southeast. Some of the other tourism venues were off more than that, and hotels and whatnot, so we're actually pretty happy.
Growth is strongest at the western end of the system. Car decks are full in Prince William Sound, and Beadle says Kodiak Homer traffic is up 25%. For a little perspective, the ferry system carried about 320,000 passengers in 2009, plus about 110,000 cars and trucks. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
A Catholic priest who worked in Fairbanks for 12 years has been cleared of an accusation of sexual abuse. Father Gerald Ornowski was accused last year by a woman for abuse she claimed happened in 1994 when she was growing up in Stebbins, where Ornowski was then serving. The woman withdrew her claim this spring, and her civil damages case was dismissed by a U.S. District Court judge. Father Ornowski is a member of the Massachusetts-based order, but in Alaska is under the supervision of the Fairbanks Catholic Diocese. Diocese spokesman Robert Hannon says the case against Father Ornowski was dismissed with extreme prejudice.
This is legal language, meaning that the woman would not be able to file her claims again in court against Father Gerald. So the bottom line would be the case is now out of court. Father Gerald is reinstated his faculties and he can serve as a minister either here in Alaska and or other places around the country.
Ornowski has been on administrative leave from his most recent assignment in Fairbanks as a chaplain and pastor at St. Mark's University Church. Hannon says it's unclear whether Father Ornowski will return to work for the diocese or take a new assignment from his Massachusetts-based order. Ornowski is traveling and unavailable for comment, but in a diocese press release says he harbors no animosity towards his accuser and thanks those who supported him during the year-long ordeal.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender, and by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The group behind Juneau's bid to host the 2014 Arctic Winter Games launched a website Sunday and will spend the next 45 days organizing all the documents needed for the city's bid. The book-length report will detail how Juneau plans to pull off the event, which happens every 2 years in a different northern region. Group members gave a presentation to the Assembly earlier this week. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Pam Leary is co-chair of Juneau's Arctic Winter Games Bid Committee. She attended this year's games in Grand Prairie, Alberta, as an official ambassador of the city. Now she thinks Juneau has what it takes to make the games a success.
The kids, just watching their interactions with the athletes from the other lands, is phenomenal. Watching them exchange their jackets and their uniforms and their flags and the pin trading that goes on. I mean, there's just joy on everybody's face. It's just one of those events that just wows you.
The Arctic Winter Games feature a variety of sporting events such as skiing, curling, figure skating, and dog mushing. Athletes range in age from 13 to 19 years old and hail from Alaska, northern Canada, Scandinavia, and Russia. Greenland was supposed to host the 2014 Games, but officials there backed out earlier this year. Both Juneau and Fairbanks have submitted intents to bid and each received $50,000 in state funds to help write their bid. The bid committee will seek Assembly approval for Juneau's bid in mid-September, about a month before the document is due. Leary's co-chair on the bid committee is Kirk Duncan, manager of the city-owned Eagle Crest Ski Area. He has a pretty good feel for what facilities Juneau already has in place. He says the city will have to pay at least $5 million just to make the games happen. Then there's the infrastructure that needs to be added. Juneau would have to build two more ice sheets, either temporarily or in the form of a new ice arena. Duncan says that could push their bid over $10 million.
We're spending the next 45 days really trying to true up the numbers as much as possible. If we build another permanent sheet of ice, it could be upwards of the total cost of $12 million, $5 million to do the games and $7 million to build the ice arena. There's a gazillion different ways to build ice arenas that can be anywhere from $1 million to $7 million.
Duncan says the committee is researching grants and other funding sources if Juneau were to be awarded the games. Juneau bid on the 2006 Arctic Winter Games, which went to the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Tim Dillon was executive director of those games and says the borough made significant investments in infrastructure.
We actually built a new sheet of ice down in Homer. It's right there on the spit. We had to do some improvements on a variety of different facilities. From a communication standpoint, we did a lot of things from internet access to cell phone access. There were areas where we needed to widen roads because we knew that there was no way to get the number of buses we needed to be able to stage properly. So it was a variety of different things.
Leary notes that Fairbanks has hosted the games twice, while Juneau has never hosted them. She encourages people to go to the bid committee's website, awgjuneau.org, for more information, and says people can help with the bid by writing letters of support.
The international committee really looks to see whether the community is behind the games. And so I think they look at those letters, they look at who the letters are being written from. They want to make sure that everybody from just regular citizens like you and me want the games to businesses and key community leaders.
If the Assembly approves the committee's bid, Arctic Winter Games officials would come to Juneau early next year for a site visit. The last time that happened, during the 2006 bid process, the officials were weathered out of town for a day, and when they finally arrived, there was no snow at Eagle Crest. Leary and Duncan say weather and transportation concerns will be addressed in the bid. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Some Anchorage youngsters will have tales to tell when it comes time to swap stories on how they spent their summer. Many of them spent it in hard labor, digging in gravel and filling wheelbarrows to help blaze a trail for a good cause. And they didn't know it at the time, but their work was getting national recognition. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
On a drizzly Wednesday, a dozen Anchorage boys and girls are gathered at the city's Senior Center parking lot in Midtown. They are decked out in hard hats and matching yellow t-shirts, and they are wielding shovels, not in a menacing way, but in the old-fashioned way. They are digging gravel from a big pile in the lot and loading it into wheelbarrows, lots of wheelbarrows, and then in a long yellow t-shirted line, they wheel the full barrows through the parking lot and down what is soon to become a trail. The trail is soon to link the Anchorage Senior Center to the Chester Creek Greenbelt, not too far away. Crew boss Alex Roman, 29, stands by with a rake as a fresh wheelbarrow load of gravel is dumped over a long strip of black landscaping material.
Right now we're working on graveling the trail. It's going to be the surface to about 1,000 feet of trail to connect it from the Senior Center to the Chester Creek Trail.
Roman is a field educator for the city's Youth Employment in Parks program.
It is.
Shoveling gravel is not easy.
Neither is wheelbarrowing it.
And neither is raking it.
Yeah. Well,
so how much further do you have to go?
It's quite a bit further down. I mean, the whole connection is 1,000 feet, and we're maybe a quarter of the way through, a third of the way through. So we've got quite a ways. And they're still working on grubbing out the rest of the trail right now.
The youth, ages 16 to 19, are students on summer break who are paid to work on park upkeep and improvements. The Senior Center Trail is being constructed under the direction of professional trail builders. The young workers help remove vegetation down to mineral soil, then get to work shoveling and hauling gravel. There is no heavy equipment involved. The young crew uses elbow grease to get the job done. Crew boss Roman says the trail will serve the general public.
The neighborhood that's around this area, it's a quick access point to the trail, so they can hop on their bikes and not have to meander all the way down to the bridge.
The state legislature has helped to fund the Youth Employment in Parks project, which is being done in partnership with the Anchorage Park Foundation, the city's Parks and Recreation Department, and Alaska Youth for Environmental Action. There are two sides to the program, park upkeep and recreation. Some of the young employees work in recreational programs, but the majority of them, like 17-year-old Abram Tiak, work on conservation-oriented projects.
Yeah, I enjoy it very much. It's a very good first job opportunity. You know, this is my first job right now, and I think it's just really good for skill building and work history.
It's the conservation projects that got Anchorage's Youth Employment in Parks nominated for a national award. In partnership with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the youth program used bioengineering techniques to restore stream and lake banks and has worked with invasive species control projects as well as building soft surface trails to minimize wetland impacts. This week, the U.S. Department of the Interior announced the Youth Employment in Parks program has gained a 2010 Partners in Conservation Award, one of only a handful of similar honors given around the country. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ed Schoenfeld and Casey Kelly in Juneau, and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by GrantStation, your fast track to funding, helping identify appropriate grant makers for your organization's programs and projects, on the web at grantstation.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.